Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. I am Jared Morris, and I am subbing for Amy Otto and Lee Cantor. Today, we're going to be talking about the restaurant industry in Atlanta, and I have a couple guests with me, and we're going to start off with Harold Schumacher with the Schumacher Group. How are you doing, Harold?
Fine. Good morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and just dive right into it. What are some of the current trends in restaurant real estate in the Atlanta area?
I guess as far as concepts go and food, the three most popular right now seem to be burgers, pizza, and Mexican, more like the wraps. I think all of which speak to the marketplace as being very value-driven. You know, people are looking for ways to spend money, but they don't want to spend a lot of money, but they still want the experience of dining out. So you walk that real fine line between, my word, dumbing down the food, which just becomes a commodity, still making it a special experience, something you don't just get by eating at home.
Okay, great. I know there's a lot of restaurant owners out there, and there's a lot of future restaurant owners out there that would love to own. You're in the commercial real estate industry, and I know you bring a lot of experience to the table, and they would love to own their own building and their own restaurant. What is what makes a great leasing agent or a great commercial real estate broker?
I think there's a couple things. One, I think it's very important to have local knowledge, that you just very much know your market, where you can drive down any street in Atlanta and say, well, I know that building, I know the history of this building, I know the owner, I know what's going to happen to this road, if it's going to be four lane, if it's going to get a median. And I think, which a lot of real estate brokers do, I think what's special or unique about us is myself and all the guys that work with me have all been in the hospitality business for anywhere from 15 to 30 years. And we understand the restaurant business, you know, from the dumpster to the front door. We understand health regulations, liquor licensing, over and above the normal tasks of a real estate broker to know what market rates are, to help negotiate a deal, to read a lease, to review a contract, to help negotiate a deal. At the end of the day, our value is getting people to yes. And so we need to have that knowledge of the market, the landlord, and the ability to pull the two parties together to get to yes.
Fantastic. There's always a big lending issue within the last 3 or 4 years. What's kind of the lending status right now with people wanting to buy a building?
Well, it's two different things. If you talk about buying a building, we're doing some foreclosure work right now with a couple of the major banks in town. But if you walked in today to a bank with the anticipation of buying real estate, you're probably looking at a minimum of 25% down payment, more likely 35%. So that is a real deterrent. There are alternatives. I think you will see and continue to see buildings that will be in foreclosure, buildings that are distressed. But at the end of the day, you still have to have the money to buy them. It is a challenge because when you look at the small franchisee businesses, the more mom-and-pop businesses, traditionally their sources of funding were government sources like SBA lending, family and friends, home equity, retirement money. Well, go right through those categories, and everyone's, you know, families don't have money. Their 401ks are reduced. Their home equity is reduced. Government lending has become very tough. So financing is a real challenge. One of my associates helps people buy and sell businesses, and so we're seeing a trend toward owner financing. I think that's going to be important in the next couple of years. An owner who wants to sell his or her business will probably have to be prepared to finance part of that purchase, whereas maybe 3 or 4 years ago it was 100% purchase, where that owner-operator was downsized from AT&T, took his or her severance, a couple $100,000, bought a blimpy Subway. Well, those days are kind of over for right now.
Okay. With that, I think there's a lot of small, medium business owners, restaurant entrepreneurs out there, either starting out or existing. And our next guest is Eric Jensen. He's with Graham and Penman. He's a lawyer and works with small, medium businesses, as well as soon-to-be restaurant owners and current restaurant owners on some of the licensing and legal issues. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
If a new client came to you, what are some of the legal issues they should be concerned with when opening up their first restaurant?
Well, I don't know. Can I have my own show? there are a lot of pitfalls and mines to step on in the minefield there. But, you know, the first thing that I would do for somebody that came to me and said, hey, Eric, I want to open up a new restaurant, is I'd talk to them about incorporating. And we can do that through a traditional C-corp or an S-corp or an LLC or a partnership. It really just depends upon the vehicle that they want to travel in. Second, and also very important, is, you know, a lot of these folks are not going to self-fund this project. They're getting money. They're having other investors. A lot of these are private investors. And they need to have agreements with these people that set forth the rights and obligations of who owes what, when it's owed, what happens when things fall apart. And so we take care of those things for them as well. Leasing, that's a huge pitfall for people. Most leases are going to be landlord-friendly. That's just the way it works. But what we can do is at least go through and try to negotiate some of those points for them. And what we can't get negotiated in their favor, we can at least explain to them, hey, look, if things go south, this is what happens. You know, construction issues, I have a client that called me up the other day and said, hey, Eric, I've paid my general contractor $200,000. I only owe him $10,000 under my contract, and there are about $60,000 worth of liens on my landlord's building from subcontractors who say they haven't been paid.
Wow.
What do I do? Well, in most commercial leases, it says you cannot allow any lien or encumbrance to be placed upon that property. And if it's on there for 30 days or sometimes even less, then you're in breach of your lease, which is obviously a problem. So we can help folks with that stuff. But primarily what people come to me for is liquor licensing.
Okay. And with that liquor license, after they get through the startup phase, what types of licenses do they need to serve alcohol by the drink?
Sure. In Georgia, you need a local license. So that's going to come from the jurisdiction of wherever they're located. If that's in the city of Atlanta, you go to the city of Atlanta. If that's in unincorporated Fulton, you go to unincorporated Fulton. In addition, you need a license from the Georgia Department of Revenue to sell alcohol by the drink.
Okay. How long does this licensing process usually take, and what are some of the steps that young business owners or restaurant owners would need to know?
Sure. What I tell anyone that comes to me and says, hey, I need a license, is if there are no problems or issues, it will typically take somewhere between 30 to 50 days. If we do have issues, and certain things are foreseeable and certain things are not, if there are issues, it can go on. I've had some that have gone on, you know, forever. We've had to sue the city of Atlanta, especially. I've sued them many times. It takes sometimes a year or more.
Okay.
And, you know, so we go through the process and try to give them a reasonable expectation of how long, but most licenses take somewhere between 30 to 50 days to get the city and the state.
Okay. After they get their license and they've been serving, let's say, for three years down the road, and they do come in with an issue of serving a minor, how do you help them? And I know you have a great example. We talked about it at length earlier on about the Mexican restaurant that had an issue with Cobb County. I think that's a great example for a lot of restaurant owners out there.
Sure. Probably the single biggest issue that I experience with my clients after they've been up and running is compliance. And part of compliance is not selling alcohol to minors. That is the fastest way to kill your business, because if it happens more than once, normally that means your license is going to be revoked. There are many programs, I'm sure that Tim can probably speak to this, where restaurant owners can use mystery shoppers and programs that are specifically designed to educate wait staff on underage sales.
Okay, fantastic. After the legal issues of setting up your business and working with a law firm to assist you with your liquor license, either be liquor or beer and wine sales, I think the next question most people have is probably going to be on staffing. I know there's a lot of small businesses, restaurant in particular, out there that will put it just a general listing to look for new employees, but I don't necessarily think that always gives you the best employees. So we've brought Steve Gibson in with Restaurant Management Recruiters. Steve, how are we doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Jared.
You bet. His website is rmradvance.com. I found his website about a year ago, and I never knew that there were recruiters for the restaurant industry. So I actually bookmarked it. I thought I might use it one day, and a year and some months later, I'm sitting with Steve in our radio studio, and we're getting ready to discuss what he has to offer to restaurants. Great question, I think, that a lot of business owners have is exactly what do you do, and maybe some value that you bring to the table that's so much better than the Craigslisting.
That's a great question. And if you've ever run a Craigslist ad, I think you could probably answer that on your own when you see what comes back at you. Essentially, I act as an outsourced HR department to restaurant owners. So whenever I'm dealing with an independent owner or a small group like that, they may not have their own resources that they want to spend going through the resumes or deciding who's a good fit, or frankly, even doing first interviews. They really want to see, you know, a way to add value to them is to introduce them to people that are already 99% sure a good fit. They've got the right background, the right experience. There's charisma with the individual. They're going to represent the organization well. And those are the things that we screen for and that we were able to deliver.
Okay. Who are some of your clients that you work with in the Atlanta area? I think you also have clients nationwide. So maybe touch on a little bit of that as well.
Sure, absolutely. My background has been big company. I've been a career recruiter. Got started with Darden Restaurants on the Olive Garden side and did recruiting for them, and then went to Ted's Montana Grill when they were a small little company and helped staff them as they grew up to about 45 restaurants. So really had the big company orientation when I launched my business in 06. So from there, I began to focus on larger company clients and do placements all over the country, really not so much in my backyard. And that's been a kind of a shift in my business strategy lately, and especially during the downturn of the economy. Is I really want to focus on Atlanta. We've got such a robust restaurant scene here. I'd say the strongest in the Southeast. And to be right here and not be on top of that and really connected to the Atlanta scene, I think would be a strategic mistake.
Okay. If there's, I'm sure we'll have some listeners that are interested in making a career change or maybe a step up in their career in that restaurant industry. What's the best way, I guess, how do you go about finding the right fit for that company?
It depends on what somebody's looking for, but I'll tell you a quick example. There were a couple of restaurateurs here in Atlanta that recently found some investors and took off to Pensacola Beach to open a restaurant called the Grand Marlin, which will be opening soon. Many of you may know who I'm talking about. But they actually, here's an interesting story. They were advertising on Craigslist for a sous chef to help them in the business and not finding much success. But I happen to know the executive chef from doing business with him and his owner previously. So I reached out to him to say, hey, you know, I know a few people here in Atlanta and know some down along the coast that you may be interested in. Can I help? And surely enough, went into business with them, did the deal, and brought them a sous chef. But I think the value that I added there was knowing some people that were already looking, some that were mobile, and some that had some experience in the cuisine platform that they were going for in the Pensacola restaurant.
Fantastic. Well, I think after staffing a restaurant, most business owners, I think, get involved in restaurants. Either they have the concept or see a concept that they want to invest in, but they're not necessarily great business operators. So I brought in a longtime friend. His name is Tim Holland. He is with Restaurants 101 Consulting, and he has partnered with a company called Zizor. They are new to Atlanta. Tim, how are we doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. I read your bio that you gave me, and I find it very, very interesting, and I'd love to hear more about it. So, and I'm sure all the listeners would, too. So how'd you get started in the restaurant business, Tim?
Actually, it was many years ago. I actually left high school at 16 and got early admittance to UGA, but decided not to go. I didn't want to leave my friends behind, so started at a scratch restaurant in Macon, opened my own restaurant by 18. And then I had a couple of mentors along the way, and they really urged me to go into the corporate side so I could get an understanding of, you know, the systems and the structure of a corporate-sized chain. So I joined up with Hooters and became their youngest general manager in the United States at 21, and went on the road with Hooters and actually opened up locations in Charlotte, Greenville, North Florida. And then I wanted to really delve into the nicer tier or the upscale restaurant world. So I actually was the director of operations for Fun Foods, and I met Chef Tom Catherall the day after Goldfish opened, and the rest is kind of history after that. He actually brought me on board, and I was his opening GM for about 10 years, opened 7 of his locations and ran 9 of them. And since then, now I've branched off on my own as of May of 2009 to partner up with Zizor Management Solutions and also do consulting on my own.
Okay. We talked about, I think a few weeks ago, we talked about the transition in the restaurant industry and the things that are going on with that top-tier type restaurant and the growth that you're seeing or not seeing.
Right.
And then that smaller tier, kind of more of like a value proposition restaurant,
right,
and the growth of that. Can you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and Harold touched on that a little bit. The dining dollars are very much changing now. People are not, you know, the expense account days are over with. People are looking for more value in everything that they do. You know, and dining dollars is a large, large part of that. So these more upscale restaurants, they're becoming more value tied. Chefs are downsizing the menu, or they're changing their portion size to restructure to become more affordable, so they can actually compete. Because in the national restaurant chain side, you've got the concepts doing these 2 for X amount, these 2 for 20s, and these 2 for $14.99, and so you've very much discounted the dining dollars that are out there. So, you know, even the other restaurateurs that are being smarter and thinking aggressively are going after those same dollars and trying to restructure their business so they can pull in those dollars, so they're not, you know, excluding themselves. The days of these restaurateurs turning their nose up and not wanting anybody that's going to come in and drop less than $100 on a couple, those kind of days are really over with for now, at least.
Okay. With some of your consulting and the small restaurant owners that you work with, I guess what are some of the issues or key issues that you always run into? Because I believe with any small, medium business owner, particularly restaurants, all of them think that they're great owners. All of them think that, you know, they're going to make millions of dollars. I've never heard one person ever go into a bank and ask for a loan, you know, and tell the loan officer that their business is going to fail. But yet so many of them do. So, what are some of the problems maybe they can recognize, and they can reach out to you after listening to the radio show, and I guess some value points that they can take home with them?
Right, absolutely. Well, the biggest issue right now is obviously funding. They undercapitalize themselves drastically. They go in with not really understanding what it entails, you know, from the location to the build-out dollars. Are they getting any T&I, or are they not? You know, and that's really one of the biggest things. They're not, you know, creating a strong foundation to start with, and that's the biggest issue. That you, if you don't have a foundation for the restaurant, whether that be concept or structure, your success rate is obviously much less, and that's one of the biggest issues, is they don't start out with a strong foundation or knowledge of what to do or how to do it. So they kind of fumble their way through. And that's really where the failure rate comes in, is because they don't position themselves to understand what it's going to actually entail to get these doors open and maintain them open. You know, some have just enough to get the doors open, and they think day one they're going to be able to start funding the business. Well, in essence, that's not the case at all. The most, you know, the first 60 days to 90 days are the most crucial of a restaurant. If you don't establish yourself and brand yourself at that point in time, you start your identity crisis, to where you're just starting to grasp for dollars. Oh, I'm going to change this. I'm going to be a comedy club today. I'm going to be a bar tomorrow. Oh, let's try a DJ now. So you keep throwing stuff out there and to try to make it stick, and nobody knows what to expect when they walk in your doors. And so you just go through a major identity crisis, which is that downward spiral that happens a lot.
So like a strong grasp of concept and a strong grasp of branding.
Right, absolutely. I encourage all the people that I talk to is to do homework and educate themselves on, ask questions. The more the merrier. Call everybody. Call friends. Call family. Get knowledge of what it takes, from the building, from purchasing, to structure, to staffing, to every aspect. People just don't know, and that's the biggest problem. They just don't know.
Well, I see Steve wants to comment. So why don't we open up the just for like a little roundtable discussion? So, Steve, why don't you lead?
Sure. Thanks for recognizing me. Definitely want to jump in on this one because I think a lot of early entrepreneurs make mistakes in surrounding themselves with the wrong people.
Absolutely.
And that can be so detrimental to your business. If you bring in the wrong executive chef or front of the house manager or GM for that matter, and you know you're an owner who's maybe planning on being there maybe part-time or even full-time to get it kicked off and then backing away from the business, if you've got the wrong people in place, it can completely drive you south.
Absolutely.
Well, it's funny because you sit at this table and you can everyone will go around the table and say, well, my aspect is the biggest problem. but you have you have a great group of people with a lot of expertise. And if you think about the restaurant industry, it's one of the last hands-on industries in America because there's just so many touch points along the way. You can't do it on the internet. You have to actually, well, you can do, I guess, reservations now, but you have to deal with lots of people. There's lots of moving parts. Every day is an adventure. There's nothing cut and dried. And I think some of the problems that Steve and Tim allude to, the quality of the people, the financing issue, the legal points, those are all issues. And hopefully anyone who gets in the business will put together a team of expertise. And we see and we all see people, well, I've worked for so-and-so 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and man, I know everything there is to know, but there's a big difference from being the last day of an employee and being the first day of an employer. I mean, because your life changes and there's just thousands of moving parts and details.
Absolutely.
That's a great point. I think for the listeners, if you're aspiring to be a restaurant owner or want to invest in a concept, or if you know somebody who might be having some issues running the restaurant, we have a great group right here that you can reach out to. They might not necessarily know the right people to go to besides, you know, a Google search or you know, they see an ad on the side of the road or something of that. So I think you can reach out to the group that we have here, and you already have your group set up for you. So if you're already into it and need some assistance, we have those people. If you're just starting out or have a concept.
Yeah, exactly. Where's the camera?
Everybody smile.
Well, I think the other thing is if you've never worked in the business, you might want to cut your teeth and see what it's like to close up at 12:30 at night or to be up at 6:30 to meet a shipment. And I think if someone came to me and said, I've never been in the restaurant business, but I like to cook, or I go to lots of restaurants, that's kind of a red flag that may lead to a white flag of surrender. But I think it'd be real critical if someone came to me in that situation and say, go get a job, which is easier said than done today, I realize, but go get a job for 6 months.
Right.
And find out, do you really like
what you do?
Being a cook. You watch food, you know, Food Network and says, wow, this is sexy. You know, I'm on TV. But sit in a kitchen where it's 130 degrees and people are screaming and yelling in a small little space, and they're all over, and there's knives and slippery things to slip on and hot pans to burn yourself on. And do that for about 6 weeks and then see how much fun it really is.
I'm having flashbacks over here.
and Jared, I can't even tell you how many times the clients come to me. I've got them off the ground, started them up, gotten their licenses in place, and then a year later, I'm getting lawsuits from people suing them because they've now gone out of business. It is always shocking to me that people will make these, you know, six-figure investments, sometimes seven-figure investments in these businesses, and just won't have a clue what they're doing and will not take the time to surround themselves with the people that do know. It's really remarkable.
Well, what Atlanta resources can a restaurant owner or a soon-to-be restaurant owner use to help them?
Well, the one large one is the Georgia Restaurant Association, and they do very good work. Over the years, they've really expanded their knowledge base and their approach to the market. I mean, they've got a foothold here. So I would encourage anybody to reach out to the GRA. You can find them online, and they do seminars on everything from opening a restaurant to controls to staffing to the newest stuff with all the PCI compliance issues that's coming down. So they're one of the largest resources that I would use that I incorporate myself with on a current basis.
And Georgia State has a degree program in hospitality studies. Gwinnett Area Tech has a two-year associate degree. Mm-hmm. You have culinary programs at the Art Institute of Atlanta and at Cordon Bleu. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there are – and there's also, I think there's still maybe an apprenticeship program. So there are some formal education programs, but I think what Tim says about working in the business is probably, at the end of the day, at least a great starting point. And certainly would encourage anybody to do that even before they think about school, because just going to school by itself is not going to guarantee the success or understanding of the business.
Right.
Harold, what makes a great location? I know there's a lot that goes into that with the traffic and I'm sure access.
There's several aspects. One is, what is it you want to do? We're getting covered up with burger concepts right now, and there's going to be three burger concepts in about a 3/4 mile stretch of Howell Mill Road. So even if I could find you, if you want to do a burger concept, and I could find you the best location in that market, do you really want to be there? So I think part of it is a consideration of, what do you want to do? Who's your audience? If your audience is suburban people and you're going to feed them at night when they come home from work, then that's going to dictate that you go to the suburbs, not to downtown Atlanta. So part of it's concept. Then you have some fundamental basics. Can you see it? Can you get in and out? What's the condition of the building? Who are your neighbors? If you're in a big shopping center, what kind of stores are there? I mean, if you're a $40 steakhouse in a Kmart shopping center, there's a disconnect. So I think who your neighbors are. One of the big buzzwords these days is co-tenancy, which means who your tenants are. And a lot of leases have language about, well, I'm moving here because Target is here. And if Target leaves, I get to do such and such. So who your neighbors are is a big part of it. These days, a lot of people are probably looking at the rental rate and saying, well, it's a great location because I can rent it for $14 a square foot, and it used to be $24. Well, that doesn't make it a great location. It may make it an interesting business deal, but good real estate is good real estate, and bad real estate is bad real estate, no matter what it costs.
Fantastic. And Steve, just to touch on what you do again with the staffing, you can staff from your busboy all the way up to management, correct?
We do management and above. So really it's anything that's salaried.
Okay.
We haven't gotten into anything at the hourly level. Let the managers do that typically in their local
markets.
That's right.
But I just want to make that point to make sure that they're reaching out to you for the right people and not for the wrong people, lack of a better word.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. But we do everything from executive chefs to GMs to sommeliers, front of the house managers, but we also get above unit level for our larger clients, more national clients. We'll do VP of ops searches, human resource searches, support staff searches, pretty much anything in the restaurant industry. Our niche is the restaurant business, and if it's in the restaurant business, we'll tackle it. That's our specialty and what we do.
Franchises as well?
Yes, we do work with some franchise groups. We sure do.
Okay, fantastic. And Tim, when a new client comes to you, you have the resources, correct, to guide them to what they're looking for. When I say that, I mean, where do they source the food? Where are they going to source their equipment? Where are they going to source, the fixtures inside the restaurant as well? Can you offer like a complete package? So maybe they came to you with like a concept idea, kind of twist it a little bit or run with what they have and then fill the voids?
Right, yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing that the GRA can do as well, is they've got a buyer's guide that incorporates a lot of the major vendors here from the equipment side to Atlanta Fixtures to Edward Don, and on the food side, Cisco and some of the other larger ones. But really, as an owner operator, you really can kind of fend for yourself and do some of that research on your own and price shop around, and then use the local resources, obviously, to I always encourage people to shop local, especially with restaurant equipment and so forth, and buy. Don't try to nickel and dime stuff over the internet. Price shop around on the internet, but buy local, because A, you're keeping local dollars, and then you're also building relationships with the people that work at Atlanta Fixture, and you're building relationships with the people that work at these other companies. And I can't stress enough, those relationships are extremely important. The relationships that I've created over the years from, opening all the here-to-serve restaurants was, I've got contractors and, subcontractors and, vendors, all the liquor vendors. So I've been able to orchestrate a network, and it helped me when I was, the general manager to anything that I needed was, a BlackBerry phone call away because of that network that you create. And that's one thing, when I sit down with owners, I try to explain to them not just the fundamentals of buy this, do this, do this, but it's also the psychological side of it, of building relationships with people so they're understanding further how to promote their business,
Fantastic. I've got just a general question. Tell me about, and it's open to all four of you, the state of the restaurant industry in Atlanta. Are we growing? Are we shrinking? I think we touched on a little bit about the change from the from the upper level type restaurant owners to maybe like three burger joints on Howell Mill, as Harold talked about.
Yeah, well, I can jump in first with that. Statistically speaking, they're saying that there's going to be about a 1% increase this year. In 2009, about a little over $14 billion was generated in the restaurant. And let me rephrase that, $14.2 reported billion dollars was generated in the restaurant industry in Georgia last year. Hint, hint, no. But it's a lot of the smaller mom-and-pop places, due to the financing, due to not being able to find the right property, is that side of the market is hurting. But definitely, you know, like Howard spoke, the burger concepts, your Five Guys and your other concepts that are massively growing have got the money and the capital and the moxie to be able to do it. So, I mean, on average in the United States, there's about 42,000 restaurant business license issued a year, and that's pretty much been the average, and they don't see that diving down this year. In the state of Georgia, I mean, there's 400,000 people in restaurant jobs in Georgia right now, and they project it to be almost 500,000 by the year 2018. So they're marking it for growth, but it really just depends on, I guess, us around here, how good we are at our jobs to make sure that we're still growing.
Steve, how's the staffing industry, restaurant business?
You know, it was a rough early recession, without a doubt. I think a lot of ancillary services or vendor services to restaurant owners and larger companies, budgets were cut, and people looked internally and tried to scrap along the best they could with assembling their teams, but didn't want to pay service fees, which of course is our business.
Understandable.
However, I'll tell you that business has ticked up tremendously in the fourth quarter and the first quarter. Probably shouldn't report actual numbers, but I'll tell you, I'm happy to report I had my second largest month last month since I started the business.
And that was,
yeah, in 07, things were on fire. You know, I thought, my gosh, this is such a great business. I've struck it rich. You know, what a great way to help people and make money too. And then, you know, 08 hit, and 09 was a challenging year for sure, but feeling good right now.
I'd probably echo what Steve said. I think we're seeing a couple things. I've had a leads group, which is made up of a variety of people like this, and we sit together every 2 weeks, and people who do goods and services and products. And I go to that meeting thinking there can be nothing to talk about. Surely there are no more restaurants that are going to open in Atlanta, Georgia. We'll just get together and leave. And every time I go, I walk out with the names of 10 to 20 new restaurants, four or five places that have closed, a report about this guy leaving. But there's a couple, two, three phenomena that are occurring. One is the geographic dispersion has increased. So if 20 years ago we talked about restaurants, we were pretty much talking inside 285.
Absolutely.
Fulton, Atlanta, DeKalb, maybe East Cobb, but pretty much centralized. Now we're hearing people opening businesses as the area, you know, keep in mind Atlanta has no natural geographic boundaries, so we've expanded in four directions. So now we it's not uncommon to hear of somebody in Noonan or Dahlonega. So there's a great geographic dispersion. And the profile of the ownership has changed, where we're seeing very multi-ethnic owners. And so, again, many of us may have started in the restaurant business. It was fairly, you know, homogeneous, American-born, American-raised owners and employees. Well, that's completely changed. And so now the notion of you can find Vietnamese food in Noonan. You can find Thai food in Griffin, wherever you're. So there's a huge spread of both the ownerships and the geography. And I think the other phenomenon is, we now have two generations of people that have grown up going out to dine, going out to eat, and they take it as part of their natural life. And that's not always been the case. I mean, there was days, and I may be the oldest one sitting here, you did not go out to eat once a week when I was growing up. It was a special treat because people either didn't have money or didn't have choices. Well, now you have two, if not three, generations of people very used to going out. And what they've done, in my mind, is they have cut down on what they're spending, but not the frequency. So if you used to go out two to three times a week, you probably still go out two, three times a week. You're just moving down the price scale. Mm-hmm. So I think that bodes well for Atlanta. And I guess the other positive part is the underlying drivers. We're still the fourth largest convention center in the country. We have a significant number of hotel rooms. We have the airport. We're sitting 500 feet from a Fortune 500 company that moved here 2 years ago and brought with it several hundred thousands of white-collar, middle-class, upper-middle-class consumers who are thrown into the marketplace and are going to spend money. So long-term, we're in good shape. And I think what Steve and Tim have said, I would kind of echo that the numbers are there. It's just probably working through the patch we're in right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a 3-month patch or an 18-month patch.
Sure.
And I would say that on the legal end of it, our experience is not totally dissimilar, but it is a little bit different. Primarily, I have folks coming to me for liquor licensing. I would say that a lot of the restaurants that come to me for liquor licensing may be higher-end restaurants. So not – now, I know some of the burger places you named sell alcohol, but a lot of these places don't, or they may just sell beer only. And from that perspective, it has dried the legal work up a little bit. Although I have seen a little bit of an uptick in the first quarter of this year with people coming back through. And I think, you know, and something that these other guys may have mentioned is it really is contingent a lot of times on lending. You know, lending is dried up. People are not getting the same types of loans and credit that they were getting before, and that's hurt a lot of entrepreneurs. But I agree that, you know, Georgia is going to come back. It will. It's just set up that way, and folks will continue to open new restaurants.
I know there's a lot of people listening, and they're going to want to reach out to each one of you. So let's just start with Harold Schumacher with the Schumacher Group. What's the best way for them to access you, Harold?
Probably our website, which is schumacher.com, but it's spelled without a C. It's S-H-U-M-A-C-H-E-R.com.
Okay, fantastic. And Steve with RMR?
I would echo that. I've got contact information on the website and also some available positions and a showing of our clients. And no, it's www.rmradvance.com.
Fantastic. Tim?
I'll memo that fact. They can reach me at www.gozzor.com, and that's G-O-Z-Z-Z-O-R.com. And all my contact information will be on there as well.
Okay. And Eric?
Sure. People can call me directly. My phone number is 404-842-9380, or they can email me at Eric, E-R-I-C, at Graham, GRAHAMANDPENMAN.com. That's Eric at GrahamAndPenman.com.
Well, fantastic. I really appreciate you guys coming out this morning and educating Atlanta on how to start up a restaurant or existing restaurant owners, how to make your business better. And this is Jared Morris, and I'm signing off for Atlanta Business Radio. Thank you guys for listening.